All right. Welcome in, everyone. We're diving into some really fascinating stuff today when it comes to the always tricky world of contract law, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
We've got this California case, Ramos v. Westlake Services LLC, that kind of throws a wrench into things, especially when you bring language barriers into the mix.
Yeah, definitely a case with some layers to unpack.
So the big question we're tackling, and I think this is something that could affect a lot of people, is like, okay, what happens if you sign a contract in English? It's got an arbitration clause, you know, that whole thing about how disputes get settled.
Right.
But then you're also given a Spanish translation, but that translation, no arbitration clause. Poof, gone. So can that business still force you into arbitration?
Big question. And, we're going to try to get to the bottom of that for you today. We've got some great materials, actually, specifically designed to guide law students through this whole Ramos case.
Oh, perfect. So we're getting into the nitty-gritty legal details here.
Yeah, we're going to dissect the court's reasoning, the implications, the whole nine yards.
I love it. All right. So let's rewind a bit and set the scene, right? We've got Alfredo Ramos, our main player here. He speaks Spanish, goes to Panda's Motors to buy a car.
So far, so good.
And here's the thing. Those negotiations at the dealership, like the price, the car features, all that, it all happened primarily in Spanish.
That's right. Primarily in Spanish, that's important to note.
Absolutely. So you can imagine, you know, Mr. Ramos is feeling comfortable, things are moving along. Then comes the moment of truth, right?
Yeah.
The contract. But guess what? It's in English.
Ah, there it is. The first little wrinkle in our story.
Exactly. And not just any wrinkle, because this English contract includes an arbitration clause. But hold on, there's another twist. Panda's Motors, they weren't totally heartless. They also gave Mr. Ramos a Spanish translation of the contract.
Okay, so they tried, right. Gave him something he could understand.
You'd think so, wouldn't you? But here's the kicker, and this is where it gets really interesting from a legal standpoint. That Spanish translation, it completely left out the arbitration clause. Like, it wasn't even there.
Wow, okay. Yeah, that's not just a little oversight. That's a pretty significant omission when you're talking about how disputes are going to be handled.
Huge. And this is not just some theoretical problem, right? This actually plays out in real life.
Yeah.
Fast forward a bit, and Mr. Ramos ends up in a legal battle, a lawsuit with Westlake Services.
Not Pina's Motors.
Nope. Westlake had taken over the contract from Pina's Motors at some point, and the lawsuit itself, it wasn't even directly about the car purchase. It was about an insurance policy that was somehow tied to that original deal.
Interesting. So a separate issue arose down the line.
Exactly. So Mr. Ramos files his lawsuit. Right, normal procedure, you'd think. But Westlake, they pull out their legal trump card. They try to enforce that arbitration clause, the one that was only in the English contract,
Oh, I
remember?
see where this is going. They want to get this out of the court system and into arbitration.
Bingo. And that's when the legal fireworks really start. The trial court, they actually sided with Mr. Ramos, said, nope, Westlake, you can't enforce that clause.
So round one goes to Mr. Ramos.
It does. But Westlake, they weren't giving up that easily. They appealed the decision, took it to a higher court. And the Court of Appeal agreed with the trial court. They also said Westlake couldn't enforce the arbitration clause.
Okay, so double whammy for Westlake.
Yeah.
But why? What's the legal logic behind those decisions?
That's the million-dollar question, right? And this is where it gets really juicy for all our law students out there. The core legal issue at play here, and this is what the courts really zeroed in on, is this idea of mutual assent. In simple terms, did both parties actually agree to use arbitration to settle any future disputes?
Mutual assent. It's like the bedrock of any contract. You both got to be on the same page, understand what you're signing up for.
Exactly, like a real meeting of the minds. And in this case, the court said, hold up, was there really genuine agreement from Mr. Ramos to arbitrate, especially with that whole language difference and the missing clause in the translation?
Right. I mean, you can't really hold someone to a term they didn't even know existed, can you?
Precisely. And this leads us to the court's final decision, which was pretty clear-cut. They said, nope, that arbitration clause, it's not enforceable against Mr. Ramos. And to get to that conclusion, they used a specific legal principle that's worth breaking down: fraud in the execution.
Ooh, now we're talking. Fraud in the execution. That sounds serious.
It is, but what does it actually mean in this context? Because it's not like someone forced Mr. Ramos to sign at gunpoint, right?
No, not at all. When we talk about fraud in the execution, it's not about physical force. It's more about a kind of deception that goes to the very heart of the agreement. It's about tricking someone into signing something they fundamentally misunderstand.
So, like, they think they're signing one thing, but it's actually something completely different.
Exactly. And in Mr. Ramos's case, the court said, look, He received this Spanish translation from the dealership, right? They provided it to him, implying it was accurate and complete. But that translation was missing a crucial piece of the puzzle, the arbitration clause.
So he was essentially led to believe that arbitration wasn't even part of the deal.
That's the court's view. And because of that, they said Mr. Ramos was deprived of the opportunity to truly understand and consent to that key term. It's like thinking you're signing a simple receipt for a purchase, but hidden in the fine print is a complex loan agreement with all sorts of conditions.
Wow, that's a really good analogy. So the court found fraud in the execution, but they didn't just throw that term around lightly. They had very specific reasons for applying it to this case.
Right. The materials we're looking at, they break down the court's reasoning into three main points.
Perfect. Let's dive into those.
Okay, so the first one is misrepresentation. Remember, Peña's Motors gave Mr. Ramos a Spanish translation. By doing that, they were basically saying, hey, this is a true and complete version of the English contract. But because that translation left out the arbitration clause, it created a false impression.
A misleading picture of the agreement.
Exactly. Now, the second point the court focused on was this lack of opportunity to understand. Since the arbitration clause was completely MIA in the Spanish version, Mr. Ramos had no way of knowing about it. Even if he'd read that translation word for word, he wouldn't have found any mention of arbitration.
It's like they made it invisible to him.
Right. And the third point the court highlighted, and this is a big one, is reasonable reliance. The court recognized that, given Mr. Ramos's limited English, it was perfectly reasonable for him to trust that Spanish translation. They were expecting him to suddenly become a legal scholar or fluent in English overnight.
So they took his perspective into account. He was relying on the information presented to him in his language by the dealership.
Absolutely. And the court found that reliance to be reasonable under the circumstances.
And the court's decision actually includes some really powerful quotes that drive these points home.
Oh, yeah.
The first one is, and I'm quoting here, Peña's Motors deprived Ramos of a reasonable opportunity to learn the essential terms.
That's pretty damning.
Right. And it really encapsulates that lack of opportunity we were talking about. They gave him a translation, which led him to believe he had all the information, but they left out a key piece.
Right. It's like giving someone a map with half the streets missing.
Perfect analogy. And then there's this other quote. Ramos's reliance on the translation was reasonable given his limited English.
I like how the court specifically calls out his limited English.
Yeah.
It shows they're considering the power dynamics at play.
Exactly. It acknowledges that not everyone is on a level playing field when it comes to language and legal understanding.
Absolutely. So, you know, this case, Ramos v. Westlake Services, it's not just about one guy buying a car, right? This has bigger implications.
Oh, absolutely. This sends a message to businesses everywhere.
Especially businesses dealing with customers who speak different languages.
Right. Like, if you're providing translations of contracts, you better make sure those translations are accurate and complete. Especially when it comes to important terms like arbitration clauses.
Because if they're not, you might find yourself in court. And the court might not be on your side.
Exactly. This case also raises an interesting question about the balance between upholding contracts, you know, that idea that agreements should be honored, and protecting people who might not fully understand what they're signing due to language barriers.
Yeah, it's a tricky balance. On the one hand, you want to enforce contracts. That's kind of the foundation of our legal system.
Right, keeps things predictable.
But on the other hand, you don't want to create a situation where people are being taken advantage of because they don't speak the language.
And it seems like in this case, the court leaned towards protecting the individual.
Yeah, I'd say so. They sent a pretty clear message that businesses have a responsibility to ensure clear communication and understanding, especially when dealing with non-English speakers.
Absolutely. And the materials we're looking at, they go even further. They throw in a couple of hypothetical scenarios that really make you think.
Oh, I love a good hypothetical.
Yeah.
Let's hear them.
Okay, so imagine this. What if the Spanish translation had included the arbitration clause, but instead of translating it correctly, they called it mediation?
Interesting. So it's there, but it's not quite right.
Exactly. How do you think the court would have approached that?
Well, that's where we get into some really fine legal distinctions. In that scenario, Mr. Ramos would at least be aware that there was something in the contract about how disputes would be handled. But he might not fully understand the difference between arbitration and mediation.
Because those terms have different legal meanings, right?
Absolutely. So in that case, the legal argument might shift from fraud in the execution being tricked into signing something you don't understand, to something called fraud in the inducement.
Fraud in the inducement? What's that all about?
Basically, it's about being misled about the specific terms of a contract, even if you understand the general nature of the agreement. Like, you know you're signing a contract, but you've been given false information about what's actually in it.
Okay, so it's more about the details than the big picture.
Exactly. And the remedies for those two types of fraud can be different, too.
Oh, how so?
Well, fraud in the execution, like in Mr. Ramos's case, that usually makes a whole contract void, like it never existed.
Yeah.
But with fraud in the inducement, the contract might just be voidable, meaning the person who was misled can choose to cancel it.
Okay. So there's a subtle but important difference there.
Big time. And that's why these hypothetical scenarios are so useful. They force you to think about the nuances of the law.
They really do. Okay. Ready for another one?
Hit me.
All right. So what if Mr. Ramos had some understanding of English? You know, the court really emphasized his limited English in their decision.
Right. They said his reliance on the Spanish translation was reasonable because of that.
Exactly. So what if he had, like, a basic grasp of English? Would that have changed things?
That's a great question. And it really gets to the heart of the reasonable reliance issue. You know, if Mr. Ramos had enough English to understand the basic gist of the contract, the court might have said, hey, you should have at least tried to read the English version.
So they might not have considered his reliance on the translation to be reasonable anymore.
Exactly. The extent of his English skills would become a really important factor in that situation.
It's all about whether he had a genuine opportunity to understand the terms, regardless of the translation.
Right. And that's a fact-specific inquiry. The court would have to look at all the circumstances.
So as we wrap things up here, what's the biggest takeaway you'd want our listeners to walk away with from this whole Ramos case?
I think the core message is this. For a contract to be valid and enforceable, there has to be a real meeting of the minds. Both parties need to understand what they're agreeing to.
Mutual assent, that bedrock principle.
Exactly. And when you've got language differences involved, that means accurate and complete translations are absolutely essential. Businesses can't just throw any old translation at someone and expect it to be legally binding.
And that's especially true for crucial terms like arbitration clauses, right?
Absolutely. Those clauses have a big impact on people's legal rights, so they need to be communicated clearly and in a language the person understands.
So it's not just about getting a signature on a piece of paper. It's about making sure there's genuine understanding behind that signature.
Right. And this case really highlights the responsibility businesses have to ensure that understanding, especially when dealing with non-English speakers.
It's a powerful reminder that language access is crucial for fairness in legal agreements.
And it raises all sorts of interesting questions about how we can do better. You know, can technology play a role in improving translations and ensuring better communication?
Yeah, can we design contracts in a way that's more transparent and accessible to everyone, regardless of their language background?
These are questions worth thinking about. And as you move forward in your legal careers, remember, a signature is just the beginning. Always look deeper, make sure there's real understanding behind those agreements, and be mindful of the challenges faced by people who might not speak the dominant language.
Fantastic points. This has been a really insightful dive into Ramos v. Westlake Services. Lots to consider here about contract law, language barriers, and the pursuit of fairness in legal agreements.
Couldn't agree more. It's a case with some real depth and practical implications.
Well, thanks for joining us on this deep dive, folks. We'll see you next time.